Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Bradley Buckles, Director, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Well, in this last segment, I'd like to look out to the future, but first start by looking back. ATF recently celebrated its 25th anniversary. As you look back, what are some of the milestones and achievements that stand out to you?
Well, over the 25 years, I think that if you look at the enforcement of firearms laws, the collection of taxes, that ATF is an agency that has had tremendous amount of successes. For man for man, dollar for dollar, our tax collection is difficult to surpass. We only have a couple of hundred people that are dedicated to the collection right now of approximately $13 billion in taxes. We do it very efficiently, very effectively. We've changed the system where in 1979 we still had inspectors in the plants keeping a proprietor's stock of liquor locked up behind a government lock, to a system where we can now collect all of these taxes with a relatively small number of people. Our goal, of course, is to collect the most amount of taxes with the least amount of people on our part and the least amount of grief on the part of the people who have to pay the taxes. And we've been making great strides along those lines over the whole course of that 25 years in modernizing the collection system. In firearms, we've moved from a nation that basically had no firearms laws on a federal level in 1968 to a system now where there are 103,000 federal firearms licensees. There are very controlled systems through which firearms are sold. We've successfully implemented the Brady Law, the federal assault weapons statute. A whole variety of laws over those years have been successfully implemented by ATF. We've also grown during those 25 years by receiving responsibility over the federal explosives industry through the federal explosives laws, and the work that we've done in the area of bombings and arson, which flows from the explosives laws, has been a source of great pride with ATF. Federal arson investigators from ATF were responsible for a lot of the work on the church arsons that were occurring a number of years ago, and we had a very high success rate on bringing those to conclusion. We now have a fire research laboratory that's being built out in Beltsville, Maryland, that's going to be a state-of-the-art fire research for arson purposes. That we're working with the U.S. Fire Administration and others to have a world-class facility. So we've accomplished a lot over these 25 years from the days when we were pulled out of IRS and told to figure out what we were supposed to do to where we are today.
What are the key challenges in looking out to the future?
Well, the key challenges that ATF faces is probably what every industry faces, and that's technology and information. That is the direction that we need to be going, where we can make the biggest impact on whether it's our revenue responsibilities, our consumer protection responsibilities, or our crime-fighting responsibilities. What we can do from a technology point of view of providing information and knowledge into the right hands is going to make a difference. We have our technology and information area is allowing us to set up a National Crime Gun Information Center in West Virginia, for example, which will be a center that will allow people for the first time to really understand the movement and the trafficking of crime guns, where they come from, where they're going, in a very systematic way. When before we dealt with the problem, when a crime gun was used, we worried about trying to catch the person who committed the crime. This will be a system that will allow us to take a more proactive approach to crime guns. We also have systems now with technology that are going to allow us to identify firearms on the basis of ballistics evidence. Today, you can, if a firearm fires a round, you can look at the projectile or the shell casing from that firearm, and it's like a fingerprint for a human being, and people can look at those and identify it. Technology is going to allow us, I'm sure, in the not-too-distant future, to be able to have that shell casing fingerprint, associated with the serial number at the manufacturer level. We have a pilot project going on with one of the manufacturers right now to do just that. That means when a shell casing is recovered from a crime scene, there's no suspect, there's no gun found, but if there's a shell casing left behind, we would be able to look at that shell casing, identify the firearm that it was fired from, and from that go back and trace the ownership record of that particular firearm. Our ability to be able to provide this type of information to local law enforcement trying to solve a murder is going to be a critical part of our future business in ATF. In the tax area, there are alcohol taxes and tobacco taxes collected not only at the federal level but at every state level. And we're looking for ways in which on using technology that we can start blending those systems together to have a system that works more or less seamlessly to collect both of our taxes without causing duplicate efforts in 51 different locations to collect those taxes.
And what are the challenges for the employees? In one of your examples you just spoke about a minute ago, you described a system where employees were manually locking up stock, and now it sounds from the description of the technology and the science brought to it, it's a very different employee now.
That's right. The employee that we're going to be looking at is going to be much more information-based as well. The service that they're going to be providing is not necessarily unlocking a lock or always helping physically investigate a crime scene, although that will be necessary. The tools that we will bring will be a greater level of expertise, and I think that's what our value will be in the future is not just the individual helping and doing the work, but the expertise that's going to be behind every ATF agency and that the agent and they'll be carrying with them. Every ATF agent has a laptop computer today. That laptop is computer is locked into virtually every database we have as a bureau. An agent arriving at a scene to help a state and local officer today and even more so into the future brings with him every piece of information that the bureau has with them in terms of helping solve that crime or deal with the situation they're looking at. That's the employee of the future is going to be the employee that has that that laptop computer and brings with them the entire expertise of the bureau each time they show up.
And just to give our listeners a sense of perspective, the United States isn't the only government that faces challenges on alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. So I'm curious sort of how we fare to compare to other nations dealing with the similar problems.
Well, as I explained, we have, I think, a very efficient system these days for collecting the alcohol taxes. If you just to digress for a second, if you remember back in the 50s when there were the moonshiners, one of the reasons is that the tax on alcohol at that time was $10.50 a gallon on distilled alcohol. If you think of what $10.50 a gallon was in 1951, compared to what it is today, today's the tax is only $13.50, so it hasn't gone up very much. It would be like if the tax was $50 a gallon or something today. So part of our system has been that the tax burden isn't there and we get much better compliance. But we've been working with a few countries who are decades behind us when it comes to establishing these systems. We've worked with a number of the former Eastern Bloc countries, with Russia, Hungary, and a number of other countries to help them try to set up a tax code that's never existed on alcohol and tobacco products. And the problems they're having with widespread diversion of the product, widespread illegal activity is reminiscent to what we would have faced many years ago. In some cases, reminiscent of the whiskey rebellion.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, so I want to thank you, Director Buckles, for spending some time with us this evening. I've enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you for having me.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Government Leaders. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. To learn more about the Endowment's programs and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.